reason is a 501c3 foundation. We do not endorse candidates. We're not going to endorse this guy. We're going to try to, in fact, trip him as he's leaving the building. But we want to engage in ideas about free minds and free markets, and that's what this is all about. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Congressman Bob Barr.
Do we have sound? We have sound. Thank you. It is delightful to be not only with you all here this evening, but many recent supporters and liberty-loving Americans all across the country and indeed around the world on the Internet. We are delighted also to be joined, hopefully in a... behind time. Leave it to the Republicans and Democrats to not even be able to get a debate started on time. But we're delighted to be joined electronically by the senator from Illinois, Senator Obama, and Mr. Maverick, Senator McCain, who illustrated once again that he is a maverick. He said, "I'm going to debate. I'm not going to debate. And, well, I'll debate again anyway." So, once again, the great maverick. Even though I believe that they are going to focus primarily this evening in this first debate on foreign policy issues, foreign affairs and foreign policy, national defense, undoubtedly, because you can't talk about foreign policy and national defense without getting into issues of the cost, whether it is the $400 million a day, give or take, who's counting the money among friends, or the $600 or $700 billion normal defense budget, money enters into it. And, of course, the latest problems that we're facing in the economy that have given rise to the bailout from hell scheme in Washington undoubtedly will come up. It would be very surprising if those topics didn't come up in some way during the program this evening. But we're delighted that the other two candidates are joining us. And why don't we take a few minutes to listen in as they start up.
Foundation of military strength is economic strength, end quote. With that in mind, the first lead question. Gentlemen, at this very moment tonight, where do you stand on the financial recovery plan? First response to you, Senator Obama, you have 2 minutes.
I mean, who said I was not prescient? They're starting here, and what I'd like to do is to hear just a little bit about what they are going to say in terms of their bobbing and weaving to come to the point where they believe that it is the best thing for America to socialize what little of our economy is not yet socialized. So let's take a listen.
Main Street, I think, have been struggling for a while, and you recognize that this could have an impact on all sectors of the economy. And you're wondering, how's it going to affect me? How's it going to affect my job? How's it going to affect my house? How's it going to affect my retirement savings or my ability to send my children to college? So we have to move swiftly, and we have to move wisely. And I've put forward a series of proposals that make sure that we protect taxpayers as we engage in this important rescue effort. Number one,
they're going to protect taxpayers by taking $1 trillion of taxpayer money. That's Washington.
Taxpayers, when they are putting their money at risk, have the possibility of getting that money back and gains if the market and when the market...
I'd like to see a show of hands. All of those that expect that they will get this money back and actually make money off of this, please raise their hand. I thought so.
Problem here has to do with the foreclosures that are taking place all across the country. Now, we also have to recognize that this is a final verdict on 8 years of failed economic policies promoted by George Bush, supported by Senator McCain, a theory that basically says that we can shred regulations and consumer protections and give more and more to the most, and somehow prosperity will trickle down. It hasn't worked. And I think that the fundamentals of the economy...
You know, the typical class envy here, more and more to the most. So their solution is we're going to take more and more from everybody. Again, typical Washington solution.
I have a sad note tonight. Senator Kennedy is
in the hospital, his dear and beloved friend to all of us. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the Lion of the Senate. I also want to thank the University of Mississippi for hosting us tonight. And Jim, I've been not feeling too great about a lot of things lately, so have a lot of Americans who are facing challenges. But I'm feeling a little better tonight, and I'll tell you why. Because as we're here tonight in this debate, we are seeing, for the first time in a long time, Republicans and Democrats together sitting down, trying to...
Danger sign. Republicans and Democrats sitting down and trying to figure out how to spend $1 trillion of our money, rather than something to be glorified. Now, that may make Senator McCain feel warm and fuzzy inside. Americans ought to sit up and take notice and say, now, wait a minute. Republicans and Democrats getting together and deciding how to take another $1 trillion from us on top of the $3.1 trillion just for the current year's budget that they're taking, to me, is not something that makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
Options for loans to failing businesses rather than the government taking over those loans. We have to, it has to have a package with a number of other essential elements to it. And yes, I went back to Washington and I met with my Republicans in the House of Representatives, and they weren't part of
my Republicans.
And I understand that. And it was the House Republicans that decided that they would be part of the solution to this problem. But I want to emphasize one point to all Americans tonight. This isn't the beginning of the end of this crisis. This is the end of the beginning if we come out with a package that will keep these institutions stable. And we've got a lot of work to do. And we've got to create jobs. And one of the areas, of course, is to eliminate our dependence on foreign oil.
All right. Let's go back to my question. How you...
You know, what he's doing, of course, is one of the old debating tricks. Not that he's a great debater, but it's an old debating trick. You bring in something that is utterly and completely irrelevant, that is the energy crisis, and you try and throw that on the table as something that, at least you say, everybody can agree on, of course, as part of an effort to get everybody to buy into what you've already said, even though it's completely and utterly irrelevant to what you're talking about. Friends, the bailout, any way you look at it, any way you cut it, any way you slice it, any way you dice it, is a bad idea for America. There are, in fact, problems, obviously, in our financial sector, in our economy generally. But with regard to the problems in the financial sector of our economy, those that are either directly or indirectly related to the mortgage problem, there are more than sufficient mechanisms already in place in law and as part of the massive regulatory mechanism that we already have operating in this country to address the problems. What we don't need is a massive blank check for the government.
Regulatory framework to deal with that. And that in part has to do with an economic philosophy that says that regulation is always bad.
Are you going to vote for the plan, Senator
McCain? I hope so, and I...
When it is, the United States Senator, sure. You're going to vote for the plan?
Sure, but let me point out, I also warned about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and warned about corporate...
The only one of the major party candidates, those two, or Bob Barr, that would not vote for the plan and as president would do everything he could to undo that particular plan or any like it is Bob Barr. Neither of these candidates will.
The great members of the military and allies that had conducted and succeeded in the greatest invasion in history, still to this day and forever. And he wrote out another letter, and that was a letter of resignation from the United States Army for the failure of the landings at Normandy. Somehow, we've lost that accountability.
Is he saying that if he were sworn in as president, he would have a letter of resignation handy? I doubt that we'd be that lucky.
Who succeed? But somehow in Washington today, and I'm afraid on Wall Street. Greed is rewarded, excess is rewarded, and corruption, or certainly failure to carry out our responsibility.
That particular word, corruption, is one that you don't really hear very often in this context. Now, they'll bandy it about in other contexts, but it is very interesting that the one aspect of this so-called crisis that we have that really is not receiving the attention that it ought to is, where is the Department of Justice? That department of this government that is that actually has at its core a legitimate purpose, and that is to provide and utilize a system that enables the people of this country, the taxpayers and others in this country, to protect in a legal setting, to have a way to protect their resources and their rights. I don't think anybody can reasonably look at a picture such as is being presented to us here in recent days with literally trillions of dollars of bad paper floating around and providing assets, supposed assets, and collateral for yet more paper, and tell me that there is not fraud on a massive scale somewhere in that process. Yet that apparently is not being looked at all. Maybe it is, but it certainly is not important to these folks. All they're looking for is a way to spend more money.
For the nurse, the teacher, the police officer who, frankly, at the end of each month, they've got a little financial crisis going on. They're having to take out extra debt just to make their mortgage payments. We haven't been paying attention to them. And if you look at our tax policies, it's a classic example.
So, Senator McCain, do you agree with what Senator Obama just said? And if you don't, tell him what you disagree with.
No, look, we've got to fix the system. We've got fundamental problems in the system. And Main Street is paying a penalty for the excesses and greed in Washington, D.C., and in the Wall Street. So there's no doubt that we have a long way to go. And obviously, stricter interpretation and consolidation of the various regulatory agencies that weren't doing their job that has brought on this crisis. But I have a fundamental belief in the goodness and strength of the American worker, and the American worker is the most productive, most innovative. America is still the greatest producer, exporter, and importer. But we've got to get through these times. But I have a fundamental belief in the United States of America, and I still believe under the right...
Again, typical Washington. If, in fact, what the senator is saying, and that is the great sound bites about playing homage to the American worker and so forth, in the very same breath, he's saying that the best way to help that worker is to take more of that worker's money and provide more and more regulation to stifle the creativity and the ability of the worker. Typical Washington, it makes absolutely no sense, but an awful lot of people are taken in by the first part of those phrases about paying homage to the worker, the same as the senator earlier paid homage to America's fighting forces, even though the questions have had nothing to do with that.
Change government, and government changed us. And the worst symptom of this disease is what my friend Tom Coburn calls earmarking as a gateway drug. Because it's a gateway. It's a gateway to out-of-control spending and corruption. And we have former members of Congress now residing in federal prison.
$17.9 or so billion dollars of earmarks. And what he's supporting here is a $1 trillion buyout.
That it was $3 million of our taxpayers' money, and it has got to be brought under control. As President of the United States, I want to assure you, I've got a pen, this one's kind of old, I've got a pen, and I'm going to veto every single spending bill that comes across my desk. I will make them famous, that you will know their names. Now, Senator Obama, you wanted to know one of the differences. He has asked for $932 million of earmarked pork barrel spending. Nearly $1 million for every day that he's been in the United States Senate. I suggest that people go up on the website of Citizens Against Government Waste, and they'll look at those projects. That kind of thing is not the way to rein in runaway spending in Washington, D.C. That's one.
You're not going to rein in runaway spending in Washington, D.C. by attacking earmarks. You could do away with every one of those earmarks, and you will not solve one single problem. Because all that does is that takes those 17.9 or some odd billion dollars of earmarks and put them into an appropriations bill where you have no idea where the money is being spent. Plus the fact here again, the earmarks, which Senator McCain likes to use to portray himself as a spending hawk, it makes a nice sound bite, but the fact of the matter is, that's not the problem. The problem is the $1 trillion that he's proposing to spend, not the 17.9 that he's proposing to take out of the earmark and put into the general appropriations bills.
$1 billion is important. $300 billion is really important. And in his tax plan, you would have CEOs of Fortune 500 companies getting an average of $700,000 in reduced taxes while leaving 100 million Americans out. So my attitude is we've got to grow the economy from the bottom up. What I've called for is
grow the economy from the bottom up. It's exactly what Clinton used to say. Yeah, and the results are going to be exactly the same. The only way and the only reason why the economy did well for a few years in the late 1990s had nothing to do with what Bill Clinton proposed or his philosophy. It had to do with, for a brief shining moment, from 1995 to 1998, we had a Republican majority in the House of Representatives that, for that brief shining moment, actually took fiscal responsibility seriously and balance the budget. And Bill Clinton, being a good politician, not a fiscally responsible public servant, but a good politician, recognized that he should sign those and would have to sign them, which he did. But what Senator Obama is talking about has nothing whatsoever to do with solving any of the economic problems, with shrinking the size of the government, or with shrinking tax burdens. It has everything to do with simply expanding the size, the scope, the cost, and the power of the federal government.
That's why we have, as I said, people under federal indictment and charges. It's a system that's got to be cleaned up. I have fought against it my career. I have fought against it. I was called the sheriff by the one of the senior members of the Appropriations Committee. I didn't win Miss Congeniality in the United States Senate.
He is right about that. Of course, I didn't either. So I can't criticize him for that.
Not in the Senate.
In the House.
I want to keep taxes low. The worst thing we could do in this economic climate is to raise people's taxes.
I don't know where John's getting his figures. Let's just be clear. What I do is I close corporate loopholes. Stop providing tax cuts to corporations that are shipping jobs overseas so that we're giving tax breaks to companies that are investing here in the United States. I make sure that we have a health care system that allows for everyone to have basic coverage. I think those are pretty important priorities, and I pay for every dime of it. But let's go back to the original.
I pay for every dime of it? I pay for it. They're talking about our money. They love the way they talk about it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to give a tax break. You know, what we need are folks in Washington that recognize who they are and who they are not. It's not their money. It's not their decision. It's ours. Another difference between those two candidates and Bob Barr.
And people who are really struggling right now, I think that is a continuation of the last 8 years, and we can't afford another four.
Respond directly to him about that, to Senator Obama about that, about he's made it twice now, about your policies about tax cuts.
Well, let me give you an example of what Senator Obama finds objectionable. The business tax. Right now, the United States of America business pays the second highest business taxes in the world, 35%. Ireland pays 11%. Now, if you're a business person.
I don't know how many of you all saw it earlier today, Jeb Hensarling of the Republican, Republican Study Committee, the more conservative group of Republicans in the House, proposed, at least I think on a temporary basis, a decrease to zero for the rate of taxation on capital gains as something that would spur the economy right now and interject some much-needed liquidity in the financial markets. Now, whether or not it would do that or not, I'm not quite sure. But cutting the rate of taxation on capital gains back to zero is a damned good idea and one that we ought to follow up on.
Spending project. So the point is, I want people to have tax cuts. I want every family to have a $5,000 refundable tax credit so they can go out and purchase their own health care. I want to double the dividend from $3,500 to $7,000 for every dependent child in America. I know that the worst thing we could possibly do is to raise taxes on anybody, and a lot of people might be interested in Senator Obama's definition of rich.
Senator, do you have a question for Senator McCain?
Well, let me just make a couple of points. My definition, here's what I can tell the American people. 95% of you will get a tax cut. And if you make less than $250,000, less than $250,000 a year, then you will not see one dime's worth of tax increase. Now, John Mint.
Does everybody feel good about that? I mean, isn't this guy great?
Here's the problem. There are so many loopholes that have been written into the tax code, oftentimes with support of Senator McCain, that we actually see our businesses pay effectively one of the lowest tax rates in the world. And
nothing wrong with that. What's wrong with that? Everybody ought to pay the lowest rate possible.
Tax cuts, and you want to give them more. It's not like you want to close the loopholes. You just want to add an additional tax cut over the loopholes, and that's a problem. Just one last point I want to make. Senator McCain talked about providing a $5,000 health credit. Right? Now, what he doesn't tell you is that he intends to, for the first time in history, tax health benefits. So you may end up getting a $5,000 tax credit. Here's the only problem. Your employer now has to pay taxes on the health care that you're getting from your employer. And if you end up losing your health care from your employer, you've got to go out on the open market and try to buy it. It is not a good deal for the American people, but it's an example of this notion that the market can always...
Heaven forbid that somebody might have to go out on the open market. I mean, we have detached ourselves so much. We have moved so far from the notion that the marketplace is indeed the forum where these events and transactions ought to take place, that now they can make fun of the fact that, or deride the fact that you might actually go into the open marketplace and engage in an economic transaction.
You've got to look at our records. That's the important thing. Who fought against wasteful and earmarked spending? Who has been the person who has tried to keep spending under control? Who is the person who has believed that the best thing for America is to have a tax system that is fundamentally fair? And I've fought to simplify it, and I have proposals to simplify it. Let's give every American a choice. Two tax brackets, generous dividends, and let Americans choose whether they want the existing tax code or they want a new tax code. And so, again, look at the record, particularly the energy bill. But again, Senator Obama has shifted on a number of occasions. He has voted in the United States Senate to increase taxes on people who make as low as $42,000 a year. That's just a fact. Again, you can look it up.
Did he almost mention the word cap and trade? I thought he started to say something about cap, and then might have caught himself. Of course, Senator McCain is a great proponent of the cap and trade, which would levy, by some very reasonable estimates, up to another $1 trillion in regulatory tax on American businesses, which, of course, would be passed on to the taxpayers.
No, okay, but John, the fact of the matter is that I was opposed to those tax breaks, tried to strip them out. We've got an energy bill on the Senate floor right now that contains some good stuff, some stuff you want, including drilling offshore, but you're opposed to it because it would strip away those tax breaks that have gone to oil companies.
All right. Speaking of things that both of you want,
another lead question, and it has to do with the rescue system, the financial rescue thing that we started, that I started asking about. And what, and your first answer is to you, Senator Obama, as president, as a result of whatever financial rescue plan comes about, and the billion, 700 billion, whatever it is it's going to cost, what are you going to have to give up in terms of the priorities that you would bring as president of the United States as a result of having to pay for the financial rescue plan?
Well, there are a range of things that are probably going to have to be delayed. We don't yet know what our tax revenues are going to be. The economy is slowing down, so it's hard to anticipate right now what the budget's going to look like next year. But there's no doubt that we're not going to be able to do everything that I...
So tax revenues are slowing down, so their solution is to bail out businesses to the tune of $1 trillion that those very businesses and taxpayers are going to have to pay for, leading, of course, to further slowdown, leading, of course, to reduced tax rates, leading to whatever. But I don't think they'll follow it through to that extent here.
And in South Korea, we have to fix our health care system, which is putting an enormous burden on families. Just a report just came out that the average deductible went up 30% on American families. They are getting crushed, and many of them are going bankrupt as a consequence of health care. I'm meeting folks all over the country. We have to do that now because it'll actually make our businesses and our families better off. The third thing we have to do is we've got to make sure that we're competing in education. We've got to invest in science and technology. China had a space launch and a spacewalk.
I don't know what I'm missing here, but the question here is what will you have to give up in terms of spending? And he's talking about all these things that are going to spend more. Maybe I'm missing something,
and
though.
I also think that we're going to have to rebuild our infrastructure, which is falling behind.
By the way, I don't know whether you all noticed, this group you all probably did, you read the fine print of stuff, but the proposals that Barney Frank and the Democrats are trying to inject into the already upwards of $1 trillion bailout plan include substantial increases in spending for infrastructure, among all sorts of other things.
Priorities would you adjust as President, Senator McCain, because of the financial bailout costs?
Look, we, no matter what, we've got to cut spending. We have, as I said, we've let government get completely out of control. Senator Obama has the most liberal voting record in the United States Senate. It's hard to reach across the aisle from that far to the left. The point is, we need to examine every agency of government. First of all, by the way, I'd eliminate ethanol subsidies. I oppose ethanol subsidies. I think that we have to return, particularly in defense spending, which is the largest part of our appropriations. We have to do away with cost-plus contracts. We now have defense systems that the costs are completely out of control.
Actually, the federal entitlement programs far outstrip the defense budget. I mean, the defense budget is too large. It's unnecessarily large, but it pales in comparison, of course, to the entitlement programs.
Need very badly to understand that defense spending is very important and vital, particularly in the new challenges we face in the world, but we have to get a lot of the cost overruns under control. I know how to do that. I saved the taxpayers $6.8 billion by fighting a contract that was negotiated between Boeing and DOD that was completely wrong. And we fixed it, and we killed it, and people ended up in federal prison. So I know how to do this, because I've been involved in these issues for many, many years. But I think that we have to examine every agency of government and find out those that are doing their job and keep them, and find out those that aren't and eliminate them. And we'll have to scrub every agency of government.
But if I hear the two of you correctly, neither one of you is suggesting any major changes in what you
want. There are going to be things that end up having to be deferred and delayed. Well, look, I want to make sure that we are investing in energy in order to free ourselves from dependence on foreign oil. Now, that is a big project. That is a multi-year
program. But you're not willing to give that up.
Well, I'm not willing to give up the need to do it, but there may be individual components of it that we can do. But John's right that we've got...
Notice he has to be very careful here, otherwise he's going to get all the environmental wackos mad at him because of all those programs, those alternative energy programs that they're trying to fund. He's coming awfully close to saying or admitting or implying that he's going to have to, that those might have to be scaled back, which, of course, if he were president, they wouldn't be. But that could get some of his constituencies very mad at him, so he's got to be very careful here.
We are going to have to change the culture. One of the, you know, John mentioned me being wildly liberal. Mostly that's just me opposing George Bush's wrong-headed policies since I've been in Congress. But I think that it is also important to recognize that I worked with Tom Coburn, the most conservative, one of the most conservative Republicans, who John already mentioned, to set up what we call a Google for Government, which says that we are going to list every dollar of federal spending to make sure that the taxpayer can take a look and see who, in fact, is promoting some of these spending projects that John's been railing about.
What I'm trying to get at is this. Excuse me, if I may, Senator. Trying to get at that you all, one of you is going to be the President of the United States come January.
Wait a minute. What about Bob Barr? Wrong.
Is how this is going to affect you, not in very specific small ways, but in major ways in the approach you would take as to the presidency.
Well, how about a spending freeze on everything but defense, veteran affairs, and entitlement programs?
Spending freeze?
I think we ought to seriously consider, with the exceptions of caring for our veterans, national defense, and several other vital issues.
Would you go for that?
Well, the problem is spending freeze.
Several other vital issues. Yeah. All of this is just rhetoric. I mean, they don't want to talk about spending cuts. You know, as soon as McCain said that, you know, then he starts waffling on it. You know, they are hardwired as status quo parties, wedded to using the largesse of the American taxpayers to fund programs that they want, that they believe are in the best interest of the country or of some constituent group out there. That's their business. They cannot bring themselves to talk about really cutting anything. They'll do it in general terms a little bit, but when it comes to specifics, they just can't bring themselves to do it, either one of them.
Natural gas, flex fuel cars and all that. But we also have to have offshore drilling, and we also have to have nuclear power. Senator Obama opposes both storing and reprocessing of spent nuclear fuel. You can't get there from here. And the fact is that we can create 700,000 jobs by building, constructing 45 new nuclear power plants by the year 2030. Nuclear power is not only important as far as eliminating our dependence on foreign oil, but it's also important as far as climate change is concerned. An issue that I have been involved in for many, many years, and I'm proud of the work that I've done there, along with Senator Clinton.
Let me see, before we go to another lead question, let me see if I could figure out a way to get, ask the same question in a different, slightly different way here. Are you willing to...
Did he say President Clinton or Senator Clinton? Senator Clinton, that's what I thought.
Going to affect the way you rule the country as President of the United States beyond...
Rule the country?
Is it going to have a major effect?
There is no doubt that it's going to affect our budgets. There is no doubt about it. Even if we get all $700 billion back, let's assume the markets recover, we're holding assets long enough that eventually taxpayers get it back. And that happened during the Great Depression when Roosevelt purchased a whole bunch of homes. Over time, home values went back up. And in fact, government made a profit. If we're lucky and we do it right, that could potentially happen. But in the short term...
That makes it right? I mean, even if that were true, that makes it right? Of course not.
We can also expect less tax revenue. So there's no doubt that as president, I'm going to have to make some tough decisions. The only point I want to make is this, that in order to make those tough decisions, we've got to know what our values are and who we're fighting for and what our priorities are. And if we are spending $300 billion on tax cuts for people who don't need them and weren't even asking for them, and we are leaving out health care, which is crushing on people all across the country, then I think we have made a bad decision, and I want to make sure we're not shortchanging our long-term priorities.
Well, I want to make sure that we're not handing the health care system over to the federal government, which is basically what would ultimately happen with Senator Obama's health care plan. I want the families to make the decisions between themselves and their doctors, not the federal government. Look, we have to obviously cut spending. I have fought to cut spending. Senator Obama has $800 billion in new spending programs. I would suggest he start by canceling some of those.
Yeah, somebody should have given the moderator the National Taxpayer Union figures. I don't know whether you all saw those. But the NTU analyzed the programs and policies and statements that each of the three of us had made in terms of what we would support, what the party which we're representing supports in terms of spending. Senator Obama was far and away the biggest spender. Senator McCain is right about that, with several hundred billion dollars in additional spending. And that doesn't even account for the trillion-dollar bailout. Senator McCain, though, was not that far behind in terms of, I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 billion or so in new spending that he and the party that he represents called for as part of its policies and platform. The only of the three candidates, Senator Obama, Senator McCain, and myself, who supported, and this is in the view of the NTU, not my view, a significant and actual reduction in federal spending of hundreds of billions of dollars, is Bob Barr. That's the question that they ought to be proposed.
Almost all of his budgets. So to stand here after 8 years and say that you're going to lead on controlling spending and, you know, balancing our tax cuts so that they help middle-class families, when over the last 8 years that hasn't happened, I think it's hard to swallow.
Quick response. It's well known that I have not been elected Miss Congeniality in the United States Senate, nor with the administration. I have opposed the president on spending, on climate change, on torture of prisoners, on...
Didn't he oppose the president and then support the president on those things? Isn't that what they accused Kerry of doing? Maybe not.
Very well. And that is independent and a maverick of the Senate. And I'm happy to say that I've got a partner that's a good maverick along with me now.
All right, let's go to another subject. Lead question, 2 minutes to you, Senator McCain. Much has been said about the lessons of Vietnam. What do you see as the lessons of Iraq?
I think the lessons of Iraq are very clear, that you cannot have a failed strategy that will then cause you to nearly lose a conflict. Our initial...
What?
And everybody celebrated. And then the war was very badly mishandled. I went to Iraq in 2003 and came back and said, we've got to change this strategy. This strategy requires additional troops. It requires a fundamental change in strategy, and I fought for it. And finally, we came up with a great general and a strategy that has succeeded. This strategy has succeeded, and we are winning in Iraq. And we will come home with victory and with honor. And that withdrawal is the result of every counterinsurgency that succeeds. And I want to tell you that now that we will succeed and our troops will come home and not in defeat, that we will see a stable ally in the region and a fledgling democracy. The consequences of defeat would have been increased Iranian influence. It would have been increase in sectarian violence. It would have been a wider war, which the United States of America might have had to come back. So there was a lot at stake there. And thanks to this great General David Petraeus and the troops who serve under him, they have succeeded. And we are winning in Iraq, and we will come home.
You know, none of these folks really want to address the underlying issue. And, of course, the moderator doesn't probe. The underlying issue is not did the surge work or not. I mean, of course it works. I mean, we'd be in really bad shape if interjecting 30 to 40 to 50,000 more U.S. troops into a theater of operations did not improve the situation. I mean, we'd be in real bad shape if that weren't the case. Of course it did. But that's still not the issue. Neither of them is really addressing what we were doing there in the first place, whether it is good policy for the United States of America and consistent with both our notions of national defense and our history to be occupying a foreign land. Notice also that, that Senator McCain has not indicated in any way when those troops will come home. He has very glibly in the past talked or joked, it's hard to tell when, you know, he crosses the line, for 100 years over there. Maybe it's somewhat less than that. But, you know, it's very easy to talk in generalities about this, but he's not addressed the specific issue, and I doubt that Senator Obama is either.
We took our eye off the ball. And not to mention that we are still spending $10 billion a month when they have a $79 billion surplus at a time when we are in great distress here at home, and we just talked about the fact that our budget is way overstretched, and we are borrowing money from overseas to try to finance just some of the basic functions of our government. So I think the lesson to be drawn is that we should never hesitate to use military force, and I will not, as president, in order to keep the American people safe. But we have to use our military wisely, and we did not use our military wisely in Iraq.
Do you agree that a lesson of Iraq?
The next president of the United States is not going to have to address the issue as to whether we went into Iraq or not. The next president of the United States is going to have to decide how we leave, when we leave, and what we leave behind. That's the decision of the next president of the United States. Senator Obama said the surge could not work, said it would increase sectarian violence, said it was doomed to failure. Recently on a television program, he said it exceeded our wildest expectations. But yet, after conceding that, he still says that he would oppose the surge if he had to decide that again today. Incredibly, Senator Obama didn't go to Iraq for 900 days and never asked for a meeting with General Petraeus.
Well, let's go with something.
Senator Obama is the chairperson of a committee that oversees NATO that's in Afghanistan. To this day, he's never had a hearing.
What about that?
I mean, it's remarkable.
All right. What
which point?
Well,
the
latter point. All right, yeah. Let's go to the latter point and we'll back up. The point about you're not having been...
I'm very proud of my vice presidential selection, Joe Biden, who's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And as he explains, and as John well knows, the issues of Afghanistan, the issues of Iraq, critical issues like that, don't go through my subcommittee because they're done as a committee as a whole. But that's Senate inside baseball. But let's get back to the core issue here. Senator McCain is absolutely right that the violence has been reduced as a consequence of the extraordinary sacrifice of our troops and our military families. They have done a brilliant job, and General Petraeus has done a brilliant job. But understand, that was a tactic designed to contain the damage of the previous 4 years of mismanagement of this war. And so John, you like to pretend like the war started in 2007. You talk about the surge. The war started in 2003. And at the time when the war started, you said it was going to be quick and easy. You said we knew where the weapons of mass destruction were. You were wrong. You said that we were going to be greeted as liberators. You were wrong. You said that there was no history of violence between Shia and Sunni. And you were wrong. And so the question is the judgment whether or not, if the question is, who is best equipped as the next president to make good decisions about how we use our military, how we make sure that we are...
Bob Barr.
I'm afraid Senator Obama doesn't understand the difference between a tactic and a strategy. But the important... I'd like to tell you, 2/4 of July ago, I was in Baghdad. General Petraeus invited Senator Lindsey Graham and me to attend a ceremony where 688 brave young Americans whose enlistment had expired were re-enlisting to stay and fight for Iraqi freedom and American freedom. I was honored to be there. I was honored to speak to those troops. And you know, afterwards, we spent a lot of time with them. And you know what they said to us? They said, let us win. They said, let us win. We don't want our kids coming back here. And this strategy and this general, they are winning. Senator Obama refuses to acknowledge that we are winning in Iraq. They just passed an electoral, an election law just in the last few days. There is social economic progress and a strategy of going into an area, clearing and holding, and the people of the country then become allied with you. They inform on the bad guys, and peace comes to the country and prosperity. That's what's happening in Iraq, and it wasn't a tactic.
Let me say,
it was a strategy, and that same strategy will be employed in Afghanistan by this great general. And Senator Obama, who after promising not to vote to cut off funds for the troops, did the incredible thing of voting to cut off the funds for the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan.
There are a whole bunch of things we got to answer. First of all, let's talk about this troop funding issue, because John always brings this up. Senator McCain opposed funding for troops in legislation that had a timetable, because he didn't believe in a timetable. I opposed funding a mission that had no timetable and was open-ended, giving a blank check to George Bush. We had a difference on the timetable. We didn't have a difference on whether or not we were going to be funding troops. We had a legitimate difference, and I absolutely understand the difference between tactics and strategy. And the strategic question that the president has to ask is not.
This is a question I have. I'm not absolutely certain about this. But is there written in the Constitution or in a law that once the United States commits troops to a foreign country, that the Congress can never, ever change that decision? I mean, this notion that once we commit troops, the Congress cannot exercise its constitutional authority to decide to bring those troops home, to stop the outflow of money and the loss of life, that is beyond the pale, that just can't be done. I mean, that's one of these false notions, these false premises that we see played over and over and over again, and these guys just trip over themselves trying to support that.
For 16 months, we should be able to reduce our combat troops, provide some relief to military families and our troops, and bolster our efforts in Afghanistan so that we can capture and kill bin Laden and crush al-Qaeda.
Excuse me, is bin Laden in Afghanistan? I don't think so. We had an opportunity, by all accounts, at least one very clear opportunity years ago while he was in Afghanistan, according to very sound intelligence, and we did not take him out. And I'm wondering if that's going to be addressed here. I doubt it. The solution to whatever problems that directly affect our national security exist in Afghanistan are not going to be solved or even properly addressed by a massive influx of U.S. troops to shore up the government of Karzai and to allow all of the tribal leaders, including many Taliban, to continue operating in that country. I'm not at all sure that is an appropriate use of U.S. resources and U.S. troops, but that seems to be the direction that both of the other two parties' candidates are going in.